So we're still in the season of ordinary time, even though we're kind of slowly winding down that season. But we get a couple of feasts these next two Sundays that don't always fall on a Sunday. Of course, today we get the commemoration of all the faithful departed, as I mentioned in the beginning. But the next Sunday, we get the dedication of the Lateran Basilica in Rome, which doesn't always fall on a Sunday either. But I'll let Father Wesley kind of explain all that next week when he gives his homily. So it's interesting to me how much we avoid death, or we try to hide its possibility. For the scientific and technologically advanced age that we live, we try and do things like seek cures for every disease. We have vaccines as preventative measures, medications that heal every ailment, natural remedies and exercise regimens that hope to make us live longer. You could probably even get surgery that'll make you look 20 years younger. That's my secret, actually. You name it, our society has it or is trying to come up with it. We will seek anything that will try to prolong life and really avoid pain and suffering. Now, don't get me wrong. I think all of those things that I mentioned, most of those things anyway, are good things. And personally, I like living in a world with modern medicine. But the consequence of making so many strides in eradicating modern disease is that it treats death as something we need to fight, as an enemy, as something that needs to be avoided at all costs. In reality, death is an inevitable part of life. We don't know the day or the hour when it will happen to us. Some of us will have a long life, others will have a short life, some will have something somewhere in between. But all of it is out of our control. And that's very hard for us as human beings to process that and to take that in. We try to avoid it in other ways too, the topic of death. Very few people really pre-plan their funerals or make living wills. We're actually going to have a seminar on this here at the cathedral very soon if you're interested in trying to do that. We use euphemisms for death, like passing away and went to a better place. As a result of the growth in nursing facilities, which again are a great thing, and I've had relatives that have benefited from them, as a result of that, people don't often die in their homes with their families, which means that we're a little less exposed to the aging process, or death as sort of a natural process. This cultural avoidance of death also affects about how we think about the church's role in it. Very often, when I and probably other priests experience this as well, when we plan funerals with families, there's usually very little understanding about the need for a funeral mass or a vigil, also commonly called a wake, the evening before. People prefer to call it a celebration of life or some other more positive sounding name. Families often want a eulogy to talk about the characteristics of the person rather than a homily about the church's teaching. We choose often very upbeat, cheery music rather than sort of music that might speak a little more solemnly about death. And when I would attend funerals growing up, we rarely, when we would go to the cemetery, actually watch the casket be lowered into the ground. That would happen after everybody left the cemetery, sort of making us not see that happen. Even the word funeral home, if we really sort of think about it, that's sort of come into existence and wasn't always the case in history, but it replaces the idea of holding a vigil for an extended period of time in the family's home after a person has been buried, or before a person has been buried. There could be this attitude that can really develop around it that, well, we'll do that church part, and then we'll go to the meal, and we'll share stories, and we'll do all the fun stuff later. Church teaching itself also gets avoided, too. We avoid using the P word, purgatory. We avoid using it at all costs. We try to canonize everyone as a saint immediately after their death, whether we really thought they were or not. There could be an impression that purgatory was maybe just a teaching that the church held in the past, you know, but it doesn't really hold it anymore. Maybe it went away after Vatican II or something. It didn't. It's still in the catechism. I looked yesterday. There can be this very negative view about purgatory as well. In fact, actually, I can be very nervous, even at funerals, to sort of mention the word, because I'm not sure how people might react to it. But in reality, purgatory is a grace. Praying for the dead is a gift. How? Well, if you look at our second reading from St. Paul, it talks about baptism and its connection to death, which is not a connection we usually make. When we are baptized and are submerged into the water, or we have water poured on our head three times in the name of the Holy Trinity, we die with Christ. We die to the ways of original sin, and we are made adopted sons and daughters of God. We are set free from the slavery of original sin. And think about that for a second, that bondage that original sin can have on us. We are set free from that in that moment. We are made a new creation. We die with Christ and we go down into the water, but we also rise with him too in the resurrection. It all happens in baptism. That's why when children and adults after they're baptized, they're often changed into a special white garment. Now, I don't get to do that as often because a lot of times they're already in white when I baptize children. But at our Easter Vigil, we actually do this with our adults. It's a very beautiful thing to see. It's all further symbolized by the lighting of the Easter candle, that symbol of the resurrection, which is lit really at two times during a person's life. It's lit at baptism, which is why the Easter candle is back at the baptismal font during most of the year, and then it's also lit at a person's funeral to sort of show that baptism is that part of that death that we experience, and also lit at the end of our life as well. We die with Christ so we can rise with him. Now, we are baptized and cleansed of original sin, but that doesn't mean that we won't ever sin again, or children won't reach the age of reason where they're able to discern right and wrong and commit moral evil. Throughout our life, we need the grace of the sacrament of reconciliation, confession, and the Holy Eucharist to purify us and to be able to unite us to Christ. We hope that if we remain faithful to the Lord and we come to the Father as Jesus asks us to do, then we will not be lost. But we have to stay united to him in the sacraments. And the purpose of all of that is so that we can be united with him in heaven for all eternity, so we can give praise to God. Moreover, the suffering that we endure in this life, the pain and suffering that we can face as we age, it's a grace, and it can purify our hearts. And it purifies our hearts because it's united to the cross of Christ, that same grace that we receive in the sacrament of baptism. And what it does is it can help remove those impurities, those attachments that we can have, so we can desire nothing but the Lord. It's possible that if we have all of these things, then that with confidence, with the grace that's given to us in baptism, with the grace that we receive throughout our life, even if that suffering sort of hurts in this life, we know that we can have, that the Lord is faithful to the promise that he's giving to us if we remain faithful to him. Praying for the faithful departed in purgatory is part of that grace. That if we die with venial sins or impurities on our soul, then the purifying love of God, it's often an image of a fire, right? Not the same kind of fire that you would see in hell that talks about like a separation from God, but a purifying, cleansing fire can give us the grace that we need to eventually be in heaven with God for all eternity, because those impurities, those imperfections are not in heaven. And so part of purgatory is that those that are in purgatory are just not fully ready to receive God. They're not ready to see him face to face. They will be ready someday, but they're just not ready at that moment because of maybe certain things in this life, certain things that are there, that they're just not ready to see God. An image that's always kind of helped me with understanding purgatory is imagine that you are going to someone's house for dinner, right? And you have dirt on your hands. You often will go and you'll wash your hands before you would eat. There's sort of that same kind of cleansing that would happen before we see God, right? That we need to be ready to be able to see him. And we, as the church, militant here on earth, we can help the holy souls in purgatory by praying for them. It's one of the most important things that we do. I preach about this all the time at funerals, that praying for all the faithful departed is an amazing gift that the Lord gives to us. And we get to do this. We do it at every Holy Mass through intentions that we have, through praying for the faithful departed at the prayers of the faithful and at other points in the Mass as well, and also through our own personal prayers, whatever those might be, to be able to pray for the faithful departed. Wearing violet today, it reminds us of that, to pray and offer sacrifice for those who have died. It's very comforting. It should comfort us to know that we can do something, that we can pray for people, that it's not all over after this life is over, which is what the world would have us believe, that we actually can pray for our loved ones, that they may see God someday in heaven. We can have hope in that. So I hope that purgatory, after that description, is a little less scary sounding. Now, we shouldn't just aim and say, well, I hope I get to purgatory someday, I'll go for that. We should aim for sanctity. We should stay close to the Lord and his church. We should try to live a virtuous life, a life of sanctity. We should also be ready to receive all of the sacraments throughout our life, especially towards the end of our life when we need anointing of the sick and viaticum, what we call our final communion, what a lot of people call last rites as well. We can have that so we can be prepared to meet the Lord. This life is about that preparation period. It's a little like if you decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to run a marathon, but you do zero preparation to be ready for that marathon. We need to have that preparation in our lives so we can be ready to see the Lord, to aim for that life of sanctity. And we should also desire that we can pray for our loved ones as well who may or may not have been ready to do that. And if we do these things, if we prepare, if we pray, if we stay close to the Lord, then we wouldn't be afraid of death. We won't be avoiding death. In fact, we'll be doing the opposite. We'll be facing it with confidence.